From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made with the keys of a toy piano. A 6.5-year-old boy was playing with the toy with his mother. She was trying to teach him that each colored note corresponded with different tones. And the boy was picking up the notes easily, so his mom set him at a real piano. That's an accomplishment for any young child, but it was a game changer for this young boy. Matt Savage was born with autism, and when he was very young, like a lot of kids with autism, music was difficult, hard to tolerate. Certain sounds, like music, could be painful, and sometimes even the smallest noises could make him cry. His mother only played the piano at certain times when he asked for it. But that all changed. Savage tried audio integration therapy to help desensitize him to sounds, and it really worked. By age 6, he taught himself how to read music. By age 7, he was composing his own pieces. By age 8, performing with jazz trios and leading concerts, his feet dangling from the piano bench. His fellow musicians would say it's like he dropped in from another planet. Well, now, Matt Savage is 26 years old. He has recorded 12 albums as a solo performer. He's played with artists like Jackson Browne, Wynton Marsalis, Chaka Khan. He's even performed for the president of Singapore. And he's spending his summer playing music all over the world with stops in India, China, Japan, and in Rochester tonight at the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. But first, he's right here sharing that remarkable story. It's hard. I've been distracted by the music, Matt. It's great to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here in Rochester.
Well, we are excited to hear about not only the shows tonight, but your story and your world travels. And I want to say thanks and welcome to our other guests who are here with us as well. Megan Ressig is co-founder and director of Spectrum Creative Arts, LLC. Megan,
thank
welcome
you
to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you. And Maria Batista Hancock is chair of the Expressive Arts Department and internship director at the Hochstein School of Music. Maria, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having us.
Were you as distracted as I was by the
yes.
music?
Yes. That's beautiful.
Matt's one of these stories that when you, if you jump on YouTube, you're going to find Matt Savage now, 3 months ago, a year ago, 5 years ago, and like 17 years ago. It goes back and back and back. And the stories are amazing. And I remember now, I'd like to ask you now, Matt, I mean, do you have a first memory of music? Do you have a first memory of sitting at a piano?
I'm trying to think. I do have my first memories of sitting at a toy piano, and I do have first memories of picking out the tunes. But what I don't remember is how fast it was, because I remember my mother had told me that I was learning to play both the toy piano and the real piano in the same day.
Wow!
Of course, it was still at the very beginning stage, but.
Yeah, boy.
Wow.
Absolutely. When you think back to those earliest times of playing, did it feel natural? Was it easy? Did you love it, Matt?
I certainly liked playing the piano. It did feel easy. The hard part was the left hand, because I'm very right-handed. But learning music theory came very naturally to me.
Mm. So let me just ask Maria and Megan, as we go throughout this hour, as we talk about the impact of music for a guy like Matt Savage, what I want to have everything contextualized as best we can here, because this is an extraordinary story, and Matt would be an international star if he had autism or not. I mean, it's the talent that's really the story here. And you hear stories about how music can impact people, young kids with autism. So I don't want to ask if it's normal or if it's usual that someone with autism would be impacted positively by music, because this is an extreme case. I mean, Matt's a worldwide talent. But is it common enough that music can really have a positive effect? I'll start with Maria, someone with autism.
Yes, it is very true. And research finds that people with autism usually respond really well to music and rhythm. And that actually goes back to the human being, right? All over the world, no matter what language we speak, right? No matter the background that we have, there is a common language in rhythm and in movement. And it starts, if you think about it, from the moment we're born. we all have a heartbeat. So we got music from the moment we're born. And sometimes I hear people that say, oh, no, I can't sing. And in that moment, they said, I can't sing. They're singing, you know, because the tone of their voice is making, you know, sounds and melodies. So there's a connection that goes, you know, deep into the human being, you know. So all of us have a connection to music and have a way to express ourselves to music. And somebody like Matt found his voice through music in a special way. And isn't that what everybody wants, to find their voice somehow?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, beautiful. Megan, what do you think?
So I think what's really unique about music is it gives us a whole new platform for expressing and communicating, and which I think, like Maria said, is just so powerful for any individual to interact with. When you're talking about autism specifically, and you're talking about maybe somebody who might be challenged by specific social interactions or verbal communication, having all of a sudden this brand new platform to say and express deeply and emote in a way that you can connect to others is incredibly powerful. And so, you know, music really can unlock this very, very specific door specifically for autism.
Mm-hmm. Tonight, 5:45 and 7:45, Matt Savage at the Hatch Recital Hall at the Eastman School of Music. It's the opening night for the Jazz Festival here in town. Tickets tonight, $30, cash only at the door, or you can use your club pass. Cash only at the door, and I'm just picturing a long line of people and a big pile of cash. And I watched this interview that ABC News did in 2001 with Matt. So you were 9 years old, and the ABC News reporter's talking to your parents, and there's this video of you. You're playing with, you know, this jazz ensemble, and everyone in the room is just sort of jaw dropped at this 9 year old and the and the sensuality with what you're playing, and your mom in that interview told ABC News. The reporter said, does he know that he could make money, maybe a lot of money, playing music? And she said, I don't know that I want him to know that, because he's obsessed with Wheel of Fortune and the lottery.
Yes.
And I don't want him to be obsessed with turning music into money. I want him to love it. And
I mean, I didn't picture myself in a big mansion or anything when I was that age, but I was obsessed with big numbers. Like, what was I going to say? But then there's also this old joke, how do you make a million playing jazz? You start with $2 million. So, but I mean, point taken, like there are people who are professional musicians like I am, but it's a hard career to maintain. And I do a bunch of things to help carry my love for music into adulthood. Just like any other jazz musician, I teach at Bunker Hill Community College in Boston, which has been really rewarding for me. I just started there last fall.
Congratulations.
Awesome stuff. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, your mom knew at nine that you're going to be playing music the rest of your life, and she wanted you to still love it.
I didn't know back then.
Well, she could tell. I mean, everybody around you could tell. But they wanted you to not lose your love for it. So here you are 17 years later, and you're playing professionally, and you're touring the world. And do you love it?
I absolutely do.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me about, for you now, when you sit down to play, do you sit down every single day? Do you have practice sessions? What's your process like, Matt?
I mean, the process has become a little bit less uniform since I've exited graduate school. But one thing that is always true when I practice the piano is that I sort of start with tunes that have really been inspiring me, and then maybe go to technical exercises right afterward once I've gotten the new ideas out. And but above all, to really expand the idea of what a jazz solo can be, instead of playing the same thing over and over again, taking care and putting passion into it.
And maybe even, yeah, as you say, sort of not twisting it, but taking something, even you can take something that's existing and add or reinterpret. And there's a story that I've read about you, and I want to know if it's true. The story I have is that your parents had started you with piano lessons, and you had done less than a year of classical piano, and your teacher heard a mistake that you made while playing a Schubert sonata, and your response was, well, my version sounds better. And that's when you decided, I'm going to compose my own. Is that true?
Oh, I can't say that I remember it happening, but I do remember something like that happening with a G sharp. but yeah, I've composed music since I was a kid.
And when it comes to composing, starting fresh, did you think even at an early age was it more fun to compose your own? Did you like reading music that others had done? Did you have a preference?
I mean, when I was starting jazz, I really enjoyed composing. I really enjoyed playing my own tunes, but I never forgot the jazz tradition. Like, I've played jazz standards, sometimes focusing on them more, sometimes focusing on them less. but recently, what I've been trying to do a lot is to take a lot of classic tunes and see if I can still make them sound fresh. Because, I mean, people are still humming these tunes today, but it's important to help carry these new interpretations into the new century.
What's an example of one of those tunes?
Well, I mean, you probably remember classic tunes like, I don't know, Fly Me to the Moon or All the Things You Are or something like that. But even if you didn't grow up with these tunes, like if you've seen The Sound of Music, then a lot of these jazz standards have the same composer or the same lyricist as a lot of these classic musicals, because most of them started off as Broadway tunes. And then there were also the ones that were composed by swing and bebop musicians, of course. But it really, in many ways, the jazz tradition is a pop tradition. And it's important to keep these tunes sounding fresh instead of repeating a past style.
I love that. I love that idea. And how do your audiences feel about that? What kind of reception have you gotten with the audiences?
Well, it's been really wonderful expanding my repertoire, and I still compose music to this day. But it always feels wonderful when I play a tune that people recognize, and one that can be sort of universal for all generations of an audience, you know?
Absolutely. Now, we opened the hour, I think, with one of yours, Got to Get You Into My... Is that what we opened with, John? Got to Get You Into My Life? Can we listen to a little bit more of that? And as we do, Matt, can you tell us a little bit about this one?
Yeah, actually, this is a Beatles tune.
Oh, I'm sorry. My gosh.
Yeah, but it's a much edgier version. It's in 7/4 time instead of the standard 4/4. And it's got a long intro, so of course it's a little bit less bouncy than the Beatles or the Earth, Wind, and Fire version, but it's the opening track on my new solo piano album, which is called Matt Savage Piano Voyages, so it's very exploratory in that way, but it's also meant to just be as joyful as possible.
How much, when you're taking it, whether it's a song like this or the other ones that you have, I guess the word is covered. Is cover the right word, by the way? Reinterpret?
Yeah, they both work.
Okay. How much do you want the audience to immediately go, or do you want them to go, wait, I think I know, and then they go, boom, yes, that's it.
I mean, I do a little bit of both, of course. It's always good to keep the audience guessing as to when the melody comes in.
This is, so as we go throughout the hour, we're going to listen to more of his stuff, because we got El Fuego, which is your original.
Yeah, that's one from when I was a kid.
And so we'll get to that one coming up here. But again, if you want to check out Matt Savage, a lot of ways to do that. First of all, you can buy his stuff online, as always. Mm-hmm. And how many records have you done now? About a dozen?
Yeah.
A dozen records so far by the age of 26. But tonight, two shows, 5:45 and 7:45 at the Hatch Recital Hall at the Eastman School of Music. Two shows on the opening night of the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. And Matt, then you're kind of going around the world. You're going to what, India, China?
That's right. I'm doing an Asia tour in August for 3 weeks. It's the longest tour I've done so far.
When you come to a city like Rochester, what is your goal as a performer? Do you tend to just come in and work? Do you try to enjoy the city? Do you see other music? What do you do?
Oh, I always like to enjoy the city. Typically, when I'm in a new city, I like to go by the river or to a park downtown or some other place where you can really feel the central character of a place, something that's pretty unique, you know?
I think you're going to see tonight. This is one of my favorite times of year in Rochester, and you know we got a little bit of rain coming in this weekend. Tonight's going to be gorgeous, and I think you're going to see a vibrancy in this city.
Yes.
You know, Maria's over there, and this just such an amazing time for the city.
It really is, and I was very touched by the way you talked about music, Matt, and that you create something that is special with like a familiar song. Because it reminds me of the fact that music belongs to the people, right? And not to a page, right? It's meant to
sure.
live, right? Through a musician and through the people that listen to it. And this is definitely, Rochester is a town that loves that and cherishes musicians and artists of all backgrounds and modalities. So tonight you're going to be really part of something that is huge and it's exploding. And we were just checking out the numbers. Every year, the Jazz Festival, it's got more people.
Yeah.
And this year, thanks to you, even more.
Oh, thank you. I've heard how big this thing has gotten. It's so impressive.
Yes. Yeah. And you'll be part of that sound that makes this city so special.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be in a great hall, Hatch Recital Hall tonight, 5:45 and 7:45. And, you know, so Matt's here because every year during the Rochester Jazz Festival, we want to talk to some of the artists who come in from out of town. You know, like to grab the big names, the great talents. We've talked to Rochester's own Vijay Iyer. We've talked to so many different names over the years. And Matt's on that list because he's an international star and he was a child prodigy. Now, when you do interviews wherever you go, Matt, some of what you talk about is the fact that you have autism. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk a little bit about whether, sort of a strange question, I guess, whether that's okay with you. Does that distract from your story? Is that central to your story? How do you feel about that to begin with?
Well, it's sort of a major part of me and not a major part of me right now. I mean, I couldn't really and shouldn't really distance myself from where I've come from. It's been a long journey, been a wonderful journey. But at the same time, I like to think of myself as an artist first and foremost, rather than focusing on labels.
I like that a lot, Matt, because what you're just saying right now, if people are listening and the ones who are listening, families and people that have disabilities or autism, could really catch to what you're saying and hang on to that. So what you're saying, and help me, you know, help us understand a little more, is that you found something that gave you meaning, right? And helped you to express who you are. And so that took you a little away from a label. Is that what you're saying?
Certainly, but but most importantly, it's about transitioning into adulthood. Because once you become an adult, you're not a child pianist anymore. Yeah. Like I can't think of myself or do a concert as a child. So I have to have a different artistic outlook, one that could develop throughout my career. Like what I could do into middle age or beyond, in addition to what I'm doing as a young artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Megan?
I know that in the work we're doing at Spectrum, we work with quite a lot of individuals on the autism spectrum. And that idea of identifying first and foremost as an artist is really, really central to their success. And it's almost like we're talking about a totally, you know, this person is a musician first and foremost. And all of a sudden, then we're all on the same playing field. And we find this kind of commonality when we work together. And I think that's such a great point that you're bringing up about really identifying specifically as an artist, and then secondarily as an artist with autism.
Yeah, certainly.
That's why the conversation this hour is centrally driven around the music and the creation. Mm-hmm. And Matt's what he's bringing to Rochester, and the reason that John Nugent, who was on the program this week, was so excited to have Matt on the list this year. Because there's a lot of festivals and a lot of places that Matt Savage could be, and he's in Rochester tonight for two shows. So to kind of wrap that part of the conversation on your autism, Matt, do you think it has benefited you? I mean, does it benefit the way you interpret music, the way you think about it, the way you were able to develop as a young child? Has it been a benefit?
Well, I'd say the number one way it's benefited, I'm not saying this is necessarily caused by autism per se, but But I think of pitches in a sort of line because I have perfect pitch. So I don't really think of things as do, re, mi. I think of them as C, D, E.
I would love to understand exactly what that means. Help me understand that.
Yeah. So I mean, I mean that I can identify a pitch without being told what it is mm-hmm. or where it's close to first. So I could tell that a note's a D, and not everybody has that skill. So just thinking, like, it's made me think of music in terms of shapes and in terms of lines. And it's helped me become a more intensive and hard and compositionally based jazz artist.
So, Maria, what comes to mind first for you when he's talking about not necessarily thinking do, re, mi, but C, D, E?
Yeah, it's definitely something that some of us musicians would like to have, but we don't. Mm-hmm. but I hear it's also a curse sometimes, right? Because you can actually hear when things are really out of tune and they really bother you in a way yes. that don't bother other people, right?
Yeah, I mean, if the way it works is that if a C is less than half a note out of tune, it's hard for me to notice, actually. But if a C is close to one note out of tune, I instantly hear it as a C sharp.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. So he transposes.
He's like a super taste. I've got a friend in the Finger Lakes wine industry, and she is the blessing and the curse is she's kind of a super taster. And so she has a great time tasting and creating wines. But if you bring a wine and you kind of like it, she's almost predisposed to find the flaws in it. And it's like her brain can't get away from it. And that's kind of sounds like what Matt is. So how much flawed music is out there?
How much? There's no flawed music out there.
Oh, come on. Come on. How much out of pitch? How much out of pitch or a sort of off singing and musicianship is there in American pop radio?
I mean, it depends on where you look. I mean, a lot of it's just auto-tuned. But even there's a lot of adjustment required. So, I mean, it all depends. Like, I tend to hear it when something's out of tune a lot more live than in the studio.
Huh. And does it bother you much, or do you think, well, you know, that's a large part of the music scene. It's live, you know, that's part of the deal.
Not necessarily. It's like if I listen to a piece multiple times, I might learn to expect a D there instead of a C sharp. You know what I mean?
Hmm. Sure. And well, I'm going to say sure, I think. Mm-hmm. I can intellectually understand. I can't really hang with you, your skill with that. When you hear people singing, I mean, there are certain people in the, sort of the pop culture singing scene who I think are objectively great singers. And then I think there's probably a lot of murky talent on the radio. I'm not sure James Taylor has ever missed a note singing, but then I hear others and I go, is it hard to listen to singers without kind of like overanalyzing whether they're on the note or not?
Without kind of overanalyzing? I mean, it can be a bit hard listening to live performances because they're a bit less polished, but actually attending a show live, it's really wonderful.
Mm. And why do you say that?
Because, I don't know, you just notice pitch and timbre differences a bit less. There's a lot more acoustic response. Like, live recordings often don't come out that great unless it's professionally recorded. So you notice the difference when an instrumentalist or a singer is responding to the acoustics around him or her.
Yeah, you're talking about also being in the moment, right? In the
yes.
music making, which is something so powerful, right? The musician's experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so you're making music and what's created in that moment did not exist before and will never exist after that, right? Because
absolutely.
It's so powerful the way it is right there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember my brother's band and their drummer uh-huh. and live shows, we would listen back to recordings and the songs would be so fast. And one day I said to Jerry, what's going on there? And he says, I don't have a click track in my brain. And we, you know, we are flying. And he says, it's supposed to be different live. But Matt, for you, with the standards that you have for your own music and with the quality that you want to achieve when you're recording, do you accept that when you perform live like you're going to do tonight, it's a little different? Do you still hold yourself to almost an impossibly high standard? I mean, how do you view the difference?
Well, I don't necessarily hold myself to an impossibly high technical standard? Because, I mean, when you're traveling, it's sometimes hard to prepare for a show. And then it also depends, if you're a pianist, on what kind of instruments might be there. It's going to sound very different. I mean, of course, Eastman is going to have great pianos, but yes. Every musician has their stories.
Yeah.
Every musician has their stories, though, so it's all about adaptability. Like, some of the best concerts in history have taken place in grungy basements.
That's right.
Yeah, I listen to classical music biographies through something called The Great Courses, and Robert Greenberg is this great storyteller, and when he talks about Beethoven and piano, he likes to remind us that the quality of the instrumentation was very different then.
Absolutely.
Do you ever think about what it must have been like for these massive, prodigious composing minds, and they're banging away on roughly what your mom gave you when you were 6 years old, the toy piano? You ever think about that?
Back then it was so different. There were, back then you couldn't just bring an electronic keyboard to any place that didn't have a piano, because there were no electronic keyboards. And carrying a harpsichord or an upright piano would be a bit too much. But then the pitch standards were different back then. Especially when you go before 1800, the sound of the piano was different then. So a lot of times we mythologize these classic composers and performers. But the truth is that they didn't just come out in a vacuum. Like, they're a part of the concert culture, the recording techniques, the instruments of their time.
Yes.
And they were human beings with occasional flaws.
Oh, yes.
And personal foibles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Disputes with musicians, all kinds of drama.
Oh, have you even read Mozart's letters?
He had kind of a raunchy sense of humor, too.
Just a little.
Yes, it's so true. Our guest for the hour, you're hearing Matt Savage, and Matt's performing two shows tonight at the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Fest, 5:45 tonight and 7:45 tonight at Hatch Recital Hall at the Eastman School of Music. Tickets are $30, cash only at the door, or you can use your club pass. It's rochesterjazz.com for the full schedule. Matt, what's your website? MattSavage.com?
SavageRecords.com.
Oh, of course, I should know this. SavageRecords.com, and he's got a dozen records out. You can see some of his stuff there, and you should. It's really beautiful stuff. This is going to be our only break. Let's go to break. Let's listen to like a minute of El Fuego, if we could, John. And then when we come back from the break, we'll listen to a little bit more of it, and Matt will tell us about one of his originals. This is El Fuego. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, is there anything to talk about in the political world? Well, Ken Rudin, the political junkie, joins us. It's always a great conversation when we have a chance to talk to Ken. You've heard him on NPR and public radio for years, and perhaps this time more than ever, he's got a lot to say about the coming midterms, 2020, and more. Ken Rudin, the political junkie, Monday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And before we go back to El Fuego, we were just sitting here during the brief break, and Matt Savage said, there's no piano in this room. And I'm looking at the big empty space in the corner, and there is space. John Andrus, you wear several hats in this building, including down at Classical. Can you get a piano in this studio, please? Is that something you can do, John? No?
We can start a fundraiser.
Turn your mic on. Can we get a piano in this studio? Don't you think it's about time?
Yes, let's discuss.
I think we should have a piano in many studios.
There you go.
It will help you move them in. And you can have a small keyboard in here.
Yes. A digital piano, of course.
I love what he said about the right hand and the left hand. I did play piano, and I started with a toy piano before I did this. And I know how hard it is to coordinate left hand with right hand. My situation was, when I practiced, I like to watch TV at the same time, which is probably not a good idea.
So we can move
a piano in. Sorry about that.
Okay. I did explain that there is a piano on this floor. Is that something that you look for wherever you go, Matt? Is that just sort of a natural thing? You're looking for where the piano is?
It depends. It depends on where I'm going. Sometimes I like to save the best musical energy for the concert.
I'm with you. But this is a public radio station, so there should be more pianos in this building. I agree. And I did want to ask you also about the fact that a lot of kids sort of take up piano because their parents make them, but they quit. And I'm somebody who did that, and I regret that growing up. Do you have advice for maybe younger listeners or for parents? Because you're someone who kind of grabbed on the piano and all of a sudden you're off and running. Not everybody's going to be like that. But would you tell parents it's worth trying to stick it out with kids, or how do we kind of handle that?
Well, it depends. What I like to do is with my piano students is to suddenly work on new repertoire when it's least expected. So, and then with the piano, compared to other instruments, learning your first chords is actually kind of easy. Although, of course, mastering it is really, really hard. But learning your very first chords, it already sort of imitates the sound of, say, a favorite pop song. And I like to ask the kids, what's their favorite album? What's the one that's really influenced them growing up? Because there are a bunch of good ones out there in all sorts of styles.
What's the answer for you if someone asks you that same question?
Oh, it's really tough. I mean, I wouldn't pick a single jazz album personally, but if you've ever heard of Kind of Blue by Miles Davis, it's the one that has been considered throughout history to be the one with just some of the most perfect soloing ever.
I would agree.
Do you want to add to that?
I would agree.
It's hard to argue that point. As a composer yourself, I mean, everybody's influenced by different things. I mean, we're influenced by our own minds and the music that we loved growing up and the music we listen to now and our musicians around us. And then we think, I want to create, do I want to create my own style? Do I want to emulate someone I loved? For you, what's the most important thing as an artist for the audience to take away from your music?
Well, the most important thing that that I want audiences to take away is sort of the flowing nature of what I'm doing, like that jazz is such an essential part of American culture, but if you're playing new tunes, you can play new tunes in an old style or vice versa, that it's not really restricted to a specific interpretation. But what I also want to do is to really hone in my individual sound on the piano to help carry the project forward through that sort of familiarity.
Okay, well, let's go back and let's pick up where we left off with El Fuego. Let's listen to another minute, John, and then we'll drop it down and under the background. We'll talk a little bit, but let's listen to more about El Fuego. And so why don't you tell me, Matt, as we continue to listen to El Fuego, I guess I'm curious to know all kinds of things about the creative process for something like this. How much do you remember about writing it? When you sit down to create, does it sort of flow out of you, or is it more deliberate? Can you kind of take me through that?
I'm trying to think. I do remember composing this one. I remember it was inspired by a lot by the music of Tito Puente, because the chords are very... A lot of times, with some of the classic Latin jazz like that. It's just a couple of chords, but with lots of big high notes that might not be so easy, but sticking to familiar chords and then continuing from there. So that that really inspired me with this one. Like, it's kind of like it's a, like, most of it, it's just based on a single minor chord, but with a couple of weird harmonies on top of it.
Let's listen for another minute if we can. I'm listening to all the little nuances, and I wonder, Matt, if and when you perform this live, I think I want to ask a question kind of delicately here, but I want to admit to kind of stereotyping a little. So I think of you first as a musician. I happen to know that you have autism. One of the stereotypes I would have is, well, you're going to remember every note photographically out of this. Mm-hmm. Because, and I don't know if that's true or not, because sometimes performers like yourself, with all this talent, they sit down and they tell me they'll play a song like this and they'll never do it exactly the same way twice. There's a little, there's riffing and there's, and I don't know if you feel that way, if you let yourself go a bit, or if you are going to kind of just plug in and everything is right there on your mind and it flows out exactly the same.
Well, that's a common misconception, definitely.
I see it. I'm glad to identify the stereotype and thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I have a whole lot of jazz standards in my head, but it's hard for a lot of jazz musicians to remember every single note of a piece if you're writing both for both hands, like in a classical piece. Like for example, this year I've been trying to memorize this Mozart sonata with Rondo alla Turca in it, and it's something that, say, a touring classical pianist would have in his or her memory. And even though I remember the whole melody, like, I'm tempted sometimes to play the harmonies a different way. Like, are they supposed to be simpler here by one note? Are they supposed to be more complex here by one note? And that's a lot harder for me.
It's a great point. Just seeing music on a sheet isn't exactly the same as hearing how it could flow out of the artist who creates it, right? I mean,
that's right. And it's hard for me to pick up on those nuances sometimes because I'm a very fast sight reader, but but if I'm trying to identify a musical line just by ear, sometimes I can do it and sometimes I get distracted.
Thank you for correcting the stereotype, by the
way.
And thank you, by the way, for entertaining the question without judgment, because I think Maria, again, and Megan, there's so much that we can appreciate about Matt, and what I'm trying to do is just put the music first and foremost and not allow any stereotypes I have, because the music is just profound to me.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And it reminds me of a phrase, Matt, that I heard, and I don't know if Megan has heard it before. Some advocates, right, for people living with autism, were just talking about, you know, the fact that sometimes we don't know exactly how to treat each other, right, in a way that it's respectful and open. And so this phrase really means a lot to me, that says nothing about us without us, meaning that we want to include everybody in the conversation, especially somebody like you. So the question that you asked, it's awesome, because we want to hear from somebody like Matt, right, about some of the stereotypes that we think are out there. But then we can be, you know, corrected.
Mm. Megan?
What's really interesting, you know, about that stereotype is I believe that there is a grain of truth where quite a few individuals on the autism spectrum have an incredibly amazing memory and ability to focus. And that's quite a benefit of the autism spectrum. And so I think sometimes,
but it's not all individuals.
No. And I think that's true for humanity in general. There's not one right. single set of characteristics you can apply to anybody. Mm-hmm. But as a whole, this is a characteristic that has emerged as quite a strong one in this community. And I think sometimes when we're talking about a set of community members, and can be really helpful to celebrate the strengths of an individual. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think, you know, when you said no, that's not the case for me. You're such an advanced artist that you've probably, you know, you're playing at such a different level where that probably hasn't come into play for you. But I think that's a really unique and wonderful characteristic of quite a few individuals who are on the spectrum, that the focus and memory can be incredible. Mm-hmm.
Well, before the hour's out, we'll listen to one more track from Matt Savage. Let's drop this music because I'm going to grab a phone call. Hoover in Pittsford wants to weigh in with something on Mozart. Hi, Hoover. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a good program. I'm really enjoying it. The comments about Mozart and his memoirs. A couple weeks ago, I was over in Salzburg, and I went to the house where he lived, and they had some of his original instruments. And to look at them, one of them looks like a four-year-old play desk. It was so small, I don't know how he even got his knees underneath it. But they play in Salzburg. They have an ongoing concert program in the hotel we were staying in. There were people playing there every day when we were there. We're walking down the hall, and they had 20 people in the room and some guys playing the piano. It was great.
Awesome. That's lovely.
That's awesome. But,
I got to ask you, about the piano, my friend is in a band in Boston, and he's got a Yamaha E5 up in his third floor apartment. And they had to deliver it with a crane through the window, but it's movable.
It's like
a baby grand, except the strings, instead of being horizontal, they're vertical. And the sound, that my daughter had a Yamaha baby grand, and it sounded just like hers.
So it's an upright piano then?
Yeah, it was set up upright, but the strings are just the same length as a baby grand, except they're vertical instead of horizontal.
That is something.
Wow.
That'll fit in WXXI studio perfectly, I guess.
Bring the
crane.
No, we got it.
Thank you, Hoover. Great stuff. Bring the crane right here into the studio.
So Matt,
as we think about, and by the way, I'm glad Hoover called, because I didn't even think about that you could kind of take a pilgrimage and see some of the actual instruments that a Mozart or a Beethoven used. I hadn't even thought about doing that. That would be amazing. But as we talk about, Matt, looking back at those classical composers and how different the instrumentation was, now, 200 years into the future for this, are we going to look back and say, I can't believe Matt Savage played on this? Or have we reached, we're in a pretty good era for instruments, aren't we?
You mean like
actual quality. I don't know how much better we can get, can we?
Well, it's a lot different. Like, first of all, the tuning for classical and modern instruments, it's different. Once you get back in time to the Baroque era, it becomes a lot lower. A lot of instruments are brighter or mellower. A lot of them are made by machine now, which can be a good or a bad thing. So it's a lot of times it's important to think about, what price range or how handmade it is, not just for an instrument of today, but for an instrument in the past. And it's just really fascinating to look at how things have changed. But even... But then there are tiny little technical differences too. Like there's been a lot of scholarship about the pedals on the piano in Beethoven's day versus today. Like you wouldn't recognize the instrument today versus the piano back then, even though it's the same style.
Mm. Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, and maybe Hoover, the pianos were smaller because everyone was shorter. Especially the Beethovens of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So we got a few minutes left with Matt Savage, who's playing tonight, two shows tonight at the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. The shows are at 5:45 and 7:45 at the Hatch Recital Hall at the Eastman School of Music. And so I want to listen to a little bit of Take the A-Train, if we could. This is from your performance live in Boston 5 years ago. We'll listen to a little bit of the music first, and we'll come back and talk about it.
Great.
Thank you.
there's some in the audience there playing live in Boston. So, and you wanted to right away point to the sax player. Tell me about that.
So this was from the CD release concert for a bigger celebration, which came out 5 years ago. And it's got two saxophonists, Jerry Bergonzi on tenor sax and then Mark Zaleski on alto and soprano sax. So Jerry Bergonzi is one of Boston's jazz greats, and he teaches at New England Conservatory, has a lot of books about jazz theory and stuff. And then Mark Zaleski, I've known him for a while. He's recently got a couple of professor jobs himself, and he's really been rising. He's from the Boston area as well.
Sounds great, Stefan. How do you like being recorded live?
Well, it's a good question, because this was just recorded for YouTube, like with the video camera. But when something, there's a big difference between when something's professionally recorded and then when something's just recorded for informally for personal use or for YouTube or something. There is a big difference, and part of the atmosphere depends on whether you know it's a recording or not.
How did you like doing this one?
Oh, I mean, I wasn't thinking of it as a recording. I was thinking of it as a CD release, because we did all my original tunes from that album.
And this was in Boston. I'm looking down the list of everywhere you've played. I mean, there's a lot of different cities. You've also done The Today Show. Oh, you appeared on The Today Show, 2020, Late Night with Conan O'Brien, The Late Show with David Letterman, All Things Considered, of course.
Of course.
what, for you, has there ever been, I think everybody gets a little nervous, has there been a most nervous or a most memorable for you out of all that list?
I can't say, I mean, maybe most nervous would be before my recitals for undergraduate and graduate school, because it's actually, I mean, you're actually being graded on it. But I'd say that after I play the first notes of a concert, I'm perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. Like, I already feel attuned to my surroundings.
Do you have a favorite stage or city you've been to?
Favorite stage or city I've been to? I mean, there are a bunch of favorite stages of mine, including there's Dizzy's Club in New York City, which is really just, I like it just for the view of Central Park, but it's world-class club. But then in terms of places I've been to, one of the most fascinating experiences has been going to Japan with my friend from Berkeley who plays the bass. His name's Shota Ishikawa. And he's been the one who set up the tours for me in Japan. And the whole jazz club culture there is really amazing. Everybody listens very intently, and it's just so fascinating.
Matt Savage, two shows tonight, and then what else is going on in Rochester for you? I mean, are you sort of in and out, like kind of coming in, doing the shows, and heading out of town?
Yeah, I head back tomorrow, but I've really enjoyed visiting here. Last time I was here, it was 0 degrees out, so it is good to be back.
It's pretty common. It was probably May. Maria, some final thoughts for me. I just have really enjoyed this conversation with Matt this hour. What do you want to leave the audience with this hour?
It's so refreshing, again, to be reminded of how music really, like just you said, you know, it makes you like feel in tune with your surroundings, how much power it has to change a conversation with somebody who's next to you, the audience, right? And the musicians who are doing music to you, just a conversation that will start over and over again in another city, in another stage, right? And it continues.
Absolutely.
Maria Batista Hancock is chair of the Expressive Arts Department and internship director at the Hochstein School of Music. Megan Restig, co-founder and director of Spectrum Creative Arts, LLC. What is Spectrum, by the way? Leave us with that. Tell us more about what you do.
Sure. So Spectrum Creative Arts is a community art center, and we really specialize in providing music, art, dance, and theater programming in a way that is really accessible for all learners. So we serve kids and adults of all ages and all abilities, and we're really, really excited to work with so many different members of the community.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate it. And Matt, for our listeners, since there's so much of your music that's out there, what do you like them to start with? If they're going to listen to Matt Savage for the first time, you've done a dozen albums, where would you want them to start?
Well, it sort of depends on what kind of mood you'd want, because my latest studio album is solo piano, but then the one before it, it's a bigger celebration, which is quartet and quintet. And then also this fall, I'm going to come out with a Matt Savage Groove Experiment EP. So It sort of depends whether you're looking for something upbeat or something mellow. So, but I have one for each mood.
All right. So upbeat, we're going to look for.
Well, you're going to look for a bigger celebration or for this Fusion EP that's coming pretty soon.
Hmm. Okay. And if you're a little more mellow.
A little more mellow, you can listen to the solo piano album, Matt Savage Piano Voyages. It came out 2 years ago, and it's my newest project.
I got a lot of work going on, and we're excited to see you tonight again, 5:45, 7:45 at the Hatch Recital Hall at the Eastman School of Music. Matt Savage, it's been wonderful to meet you.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to meet you as well.
Congratulations on all the success. Have fun tonight in Rochester, and then going around the world. What a way to end the week here. What a week. So that's Matt Savage. Megan and Maria, thank you both very much.
Thank
Great
you.
Having you. John Andrus, the engineer. Thank you, John. Megan
thank
Max,
you.
The producer. Hope you all, wherever you're going to be, whether it's Hatch tonight with Matt Savage, out at the Jazz Festival, wherever you are this weekend, hope you enjoy it. And we're back with you Monday on member-supported public radio.